Welcome to Movie Maniacs, Mike Rags and Chuck Curry discussing the greatest movies of all time and all the new films in theaters and streaming that you need to know about. Like us, rate us, share us. Now, here are your hosts, Mike Rags and Chuck Curry.
All right, we are back. Another Movie Maniacs. Welcome aboard once again. I am Mike Rags, Chuck Curry with me as well. Of course, talking about the world of movies, not movie theaters right now, but movies, because there's nothing in theaters. Although some are opening up, it's just a question of what they'll actually be showing. And Chuck and I will talk about that in just a little bit with some movie news about a lot of big-time movies just get shifted all over the place on the calendar. Some big-time moves, some little moves, but we're going to talk about that. And we kind of had, I guess if you want to call it three pretty major movie releases this weekend, all streaming, and all two of them free, one not free, and Chuck and I will talk about that. I had a chance to actually see one of them, and it kind of goes into the theme of this weekend's show with all the civil unrest and the Black Lives Matter movement going on. Chuck and I thought it'd be an important time to pick our five favorite African-American race movies that we think are very important for everyone to see, and it is quite a topical topic, I guess, if that's a phrase, Chuck, but there's a lot going on in this world, and might have finally actually seen the social shift that could make some major changes in this country.
Quite a possibility, Mike, and I got to tell you a lot to talk about on this week's installment, and I very much look forward to do, because I got a lot on my mind.
All right, well, let's talk with the movie I just saw. I watched it this morning right before the podcast. I thought it was important to see, considering the topic. I got a chance to see The Five Bloods, directed by Spike Lee, which debuted on Netflix this weekend. These three movies debuted this weekend. Artemis Fowl is free if you have Disney Plus. The Five Bloods is free if you have Netflix. And The King of Staten Island, you can buy for $19.99 on Apple Plus and other streaming services. But I got a chance to see the latest Spike Klansman, coming off the directorial win of Best Director for the Black Klansman movie. It came out a couple years ago. Spike Lee really does a fantastic job directing here. Now, I will tell you, it runs a little long. It's 2 hours and 35 minutes, and it probably could have used an edit or two. They really dwell on Delroy Lindo's PTSD. And it really, sometimes the dialogue is very preachy and very, hey, you're in a grade school right now learning history. So you get away from that dialogue and you get away from the PTSD. If you watch it as a pure adventure film, it really works on that level, with the four Vietnam veterans going back to Vietnam to try to get the gold that they have left there with their fallen soldier remains as well. Played by Chadwick Boseman too, in flashbacks, the fallen soldier. He's very good in this too. But this movie is Delroy Lindo's, this is his career performance, Chuck. I mean,
that's really good to hear.
Yeah, he's been around forever, and
sure
he's got all the great scenes. The only problem with it is he's the one suffering PTSD, and it bogs down the movie sometimes because he's really over the top. He's hard to root for sometimes. It's got an eclectic cast, set in a real life setting. And they pull no punches as far as this adventure film going on, and who lives, who dies. And it's fun to watch on that level. It reminded me of some of the mercenary 1970 movies they used to do back in the day. Bunch of old guys going back to war. But I just wish Spike would have just trimmed it down a little bit. And there's a lot of scenes in this, too, that you wonder post-production how much he might have added, Chuck, because it's an important movie to watch now, above all else. And the timing for Spike, I mean, I guess it couldn't have been better for the release of this movie on some scale, Chuck, because I think this would have been a theatrical release, would have been a social movement, and I don't know how many eyes would have seen it in the theaters. I think Black Klansman did pretty well considering the nominations it got. Yeah. But the fact that there's going to be multiple, and I mean millions of eyes on this now, and the social setting we have, this is a very important movie for people to watch. So I recommend it. It's a 3-star film. It's not as good as Black Klansman, but it's very easy to watch on TV as well, and great performances all around, especially Delroy Lindo, who might be remembered towards the end of the year if we have some sort of concoction of an Academy Awards, because the guy's put in a lot of work over the years, and this is his definitely shining moment, no doubt about it.
R-rated movie.
Definitely R-rated. A lot of violence. Jean Reno pops up in a small role here, too.
Okay.
I haven't seen him in a while either. Yeah, and he knows, boy, let me tell you, he knows how to direct. He really does. He's come a long way, and we'll probably bring him up later on in the show when we talk about our five favorite racial movies, but movies about race. But this is really he's really in his wheelhouse right now, Chuck.
I got to watch it this weekend. You know, it's interesting. I really did want to watch King of Staten Island, the new Judd Apatow movie, getting good reviews, starring SNL star Pete Davidson. Yeah. Here's the thing. I had two people, you being one of them, sent me an unsolicited text yesterday morning saying, I want to watch his film, but $19.99 is a high price point. Don't want to push that button. We've talked about this on the show over the last month. I think this is the problem in that streaming business model. Like you said, you know, it's awesome. Spike Lee's movies on Netflix, you know, for $9, $10, $11 a month. You get all his content, including a lot of these new films. Artemis Fowl is on Disney Plus also, you know, same ideology. And then you get King of Staten Island, you got to go to VOD and pay $19.99. I just think there's a lot of people who want to watch that film. They're not going to pay $19.99 to watch that film, Mike.
Yeah, and it's tough because we talk about those other two films, and in theory it's free, although it's not. But right. Psychologically,
But if you break out all that content, you know, you're paying pennies on the dollar to watch that film. It's a pretty good deal.
You're not gathering your family around to watch The King of Staten Island. It's not that type of movie. So then you can't justify in your mind. Well,
here's what's interesting. You get a movie like, and again, this is another film I want to watch. That new thriller Becky with Kevin James. I'm going to watch that this weekend. You know, $4.99 VOD. I have no problem with that.
Yeah.
$19.99. I understand the budget's a lot bigger. They got to recoup their money. I'd like to see the breakdown in that model over time, the same way they release theatrical box office totals. What is the production value? What is the marketing cost? I did see the night before on Thursday night on some of the cable networks, they were running trailers to King of Staten Island.
Yeah, they've been marketing that pretty heavy.
Yeah. Here's another interesting caveat to that story. It was booked in a handful of, you know, a decent amount of drive-ins over the weekend. And at the last minute, Universal pulled the theatrical release the same week. Yeah. What do you think that's about?
I don't know. I think the subject matter's got to be difficult to try to watch at a drive-in.
Probably, but still, it's new content for, you know, it's better in their eyes. Hey, it's something new to show on the screen. And, you know, they don't have to do stuff that's 6 months older or older classics.
But I think this weekend really marks a timestamp here, Chuck, because these are three major movies that would have been released on a lot of screens in normal times. And they're all coming out. They all came out the same day.
True.
Virtually the same time. So it'll be interesting to see.
I just want to know the whole picture here, and I hope they're transparent in releasing their actual numbers and how these movies really do. Cause I, as a, you know, somebody covering the industry, I would like to know the exact business model, exactly how this works. Cause I'm more than curious on the subject matter.
Well, let's morph into some movie news and talk about some,
talk about the release dates.
Yeah.
You expand.
It seems like, you know, my movie theater, which could be open now, we're in four in Indiana. They could open theaters, but AMC is not, probably because there's really nothing to show. If you think about it, you can open up a theater and you're going to show Trolls World Tour, and most people have already seen that already.
Right, that's what you
show. So the next movie that really would come out would be the early July with Unhinged with Russell Crowe. Not sure that's going to really bring in.
But here's the thing, that was a July 1st release. Now they kicked it back ahead 1 week to July 10th. Meaning theaters that were going to open the first week of 4th of July, July 3rd, which is a Friday, to show Unhinged, at least you have one new content film. You have nothing new to show July 4th weekend. Nothing.
And now with the news of Tenet getting moved a couple of weeks.
July 31st now from
so
July 17th.
Really, there is no summer movie season in the theaters. So I wonder what AMC will actually show, even when they open up in mid to early July. It's perplexing.
And then also last night you had Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
Warner Brothers made an announcement. It's going to go from August to October 2nd. And then there's some people saw a sort of a reel that's had another date on there. So they might have the possibility, if that doesn't work out, to release it November 25th. So
Yeah.
Listen, if I'm, again, we've talked about this. If I'm Warner Brothers, and I'm controlling both Tenet and Wonder Woman 1984, I'm in a tough place. I would be hesitant to pull that trigger, because if you look at the media in the last few days, with the stock market taking a hit that one day because some of the corona cases in the Midwest are starting to pipe up.
Yeah.
The media is not going to let this issue go. People still are getting corona to some extent. 1,000 people a day in the United States still technically, if you believe the numbers, passing away from corona. I'm going green in my area of East Stroudsburg this Friday, 50% seating capacity. The theater that I'm involved in, Pocono Cinema in East Stroudsburg, is going to open officially July 3rd. Nothing new to show, so we booked 35th anniversary screening of The Goonies for 1 week and trying to be patriotic, Richard Donner's Superman the movie from 1978 for 1 week. We'll see if people show up. I don't know. I have absolutely no idea, Mike. A week later, booked E.T., and then a little bit more adult fare, Alfred Hitchcock's Rear Window with Jimmy Stewart, to see if the more sophisticated adult movie crowd starts to put its big toe in the theater experience once again. What's interesting, and I'll just brought up, the I own a few businesses in the street that I'm on in East Stroudsburg. I got to tell you, this week, people were out in droves for outdoor dining.
Yeah, I went outdoor dining on Thursday.
I have to say,
night.
there are a lot less people wearing masks. I've seen some restaurants serving without masks. So the question is, are people going to go back to theaters right away? I think certain people will. They will. Certain people won't, but we'll see.
I think certain people will, but I don't think enough people will. And I think that's going to be the problem, Chuck. I just don't think it's going to be enough to maintain some of these cineplexes that are going on. A theater like yours could probably survive, but
I think the small independent theaters actually have a more interesting business model than the multiplex. Because let's just say hypothetically, your multiplex waits to late July to open, right? Or say they booked the that's not a really great example, the Russell Crowe movie. Let's go to Chris Nolan's Tenet. You have how many screens on your theater multiplex?
We have 12, I believe.
Okay. I guarantee you Tenet will be on 6 or 7 of those screens.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? Well, and they'll space people out.
Yeah, it'll help social distance for sure. Right. But here's the thing, Chuck. I mean, now you're seeing the NBA get a little skittish about coming back. You hear the news about certain states spiking in certain areas as far as the,
so that fear stays there.
The fear is going to, and the narrative is staying that way.
Yes,
now, the good news is production is going to start up again in California, because California's actually loosened their restrictions and they're going into the next phase. So movies and TV are going to start getting produced again. That is, I guess, as soon as they cut scene, they're going to walk off and wear a mask. It's going to be interesting to see some of these production sets. But the question remains is, how many people are even going to go to the theater? I mean, your time now is even more valuable with what you can and can't do outside of your house. Is it a movie? Is it going to be going to the theater? I find it very enjoyable to be able to go out and go get some dinner outside.
Sure.
Outside. I cannot understand how you allow people to fly in airplanes, ride on subways, protest in streets, but you can't open a bar. And I just, to this, I mean, I know it's a totally political subject and that's not what this podcast is about, but at the same time, why are these movie theaters being closed as well? If they can maintain how many people actually walk into the theater, they can actually rope off seats that you can't sit in to make sure people don't sit on top of each other.
I agree with you.
It just doesn't make any sense that
my fear, not that I'm overly fearful, because I'm not. I mean, obviously I'm a cautious to a point. I wouldn't be on top of people that I don't know in an open setting indoors, but I think the problem with the movie industry as a whole is the industry has been damaged by the production shutdown.
Yes.
That is a problem. And we spoke about this last week on the show, that major theater chains know for a fact that things may not be normal until 2021, where the product line has a stream flow, where they know they're going to get consistent releases week after week. In terms of the TV industry, it will have a problem this fall. When you look for your favorite shows, they're not going to be there because they're not completed. Some didn't go into production. also another bit of news off last night's Wire. Matrix 4 won't be in theaters to 2021.
Godzilla and King Kong getting moved too to later on as well. So Warner Brothers really took their slate and really took the lead here. Tom and Jerry.
I find it weird that a movie like Wonder Woman 1984 would actually be released in October.
I know.
Wouldn't you hold that to November? You get Thanksgiving Christmas crowd. I mean, I don't know. Listen, late fall going into winter, there's a slew of a lot of good films potentially will open up, including the James Bond movie, which has already been pushed forward.
Well,
there's only so many release dates available.
There's so many weekends left. Yeah. So, which is weird because it's a lot like sports. We haven't had it in a long time. We're going to get inundated if they all come back in September, October. They're all going to be playing at the same time, one on top of each other, much like movies.
But I say the same thing, and we've talked about this so many times ad nauseum. September, October, November, is the landscape really going to change? I hate saying that. I just want to move forward. I want to get on with my life. I want to go to the movies. I want to go to a sporting event. I want to eat indoors at a restaurant. I don't want to think about COVID again. Having said that, it sort of is what it is.
Well, some people might believe that you're not going to not hear about it until November 4th, Chuck, but I'm not going to go there. By the way, they even moved the next Gerard Butler film called
Greenland. Oh, boy.
Yeah, July 31st is going to come out. Now, this sounds like a movie right up our alley, though. It almost plays like a Twilight Zone movie with a family trying to survive a planet-killing comet as it races towards Earth. Gerard is going to play John Garrity. Great name for Gerard. He always has a great name on screen. His estranged wife, Allison. Of course, estranged. That means that one of your favorite topics, Chuck, is a divorced couple trying to reunite to save.
I always like that. That's a hook that always works.
So them and their young son, Nathan, make a perilous journey to their only hope for sanctuary amid terrifying news accounts of cities around the world being leveled by the comet's fragments. They try to survive. Scott Glenn has a role in this, too. So that's from STX Films, major movie production company for Gerard Butler. I mean, this guy is on top of his game, making big-time movies and big-time buco dollars, Chuck. And here comes another one. And in the long filmography of Gerard Butler.
Hello.
Yeah, I dropped out there. But we're recording. I'll keep going.
All right, let's go.
So Gerard Butler, July 31st release. I mean, that's like Independence Day coming out, right? I mean,
I got my sleeping bag ready to go.
I mean, so theaters got to, maybe that's the date they're set. I mean, they're all geared towards that.
I don't think so, but it sounds good on paper.
Yeah. Well, so Warner Brothers moving a lot of stuff. You can only imagine other movies, companies will be doing the same. And you got Tom Hanks's Greyhound. We talked about it a couple weeks ago. Apple TV, they have a release date. It's going to come out, I believe, July 10th on Apple TV. That's the Tom Hanks World War II drama.
So I got a question for you, Mike, for the novice.
Yeah.
Tell us what Apple TV is. What is Apple TV? Apple what do you TV. Do? How do you get Apple TV? What's the story here? How it's many people like are watching? How old is Apple TV? How many people are watching Apple TV? And what the heck kind of content do they have on Apple TV? I don't have Apple TV. That's why
Apple TV is just like all the other streaming services. They have original content. They have movie content. Yeah. I just got done watching the Chris Evans miniseries on Apple TV.
Really? Let me ask you a question. Do I have to get a third job to watch this? I mean, how many streaming services can one person have?
I will say this: when I buy a movie, it's usually off of Apple TV.
Okay.
Apple
All right.
TV. So okay.
That Tom Hanks one's a big one. It's a coup.
Yeah, it is. But again, I get your point. There's so many things to watch at so many times. Plus, you got this. The series, the docuseries, ESPN putting out stuff.
Sure. Really and this Quibi is not doing that well, I hear.
Well, you know, the content there is kind of stupid. 10-minute
movies
and TV.
Here's the saying. In this climate, you don't get out of the gate, you're stuck in the gate. Yeah, they're in trouble. That's a problem.
Chuck, did you see another, you know, just to keep talking about movie news, the upcoming Noah Emmerich movie, Roland Emmerich. No, Emmerich's an actor. Roland Emmerich, the Moonfall movie. You've talked about it a couple times. You got another actor to star in this. Did you hear the new casting?
Well, I know is Josh Gad is in it. He's the lead. Holly Berry's in it.
Yes. Well, they've added the kiss of death to any box office for a movie. Patrick Wilson will also co-star in this film. And if he didn't have the Conjuring or the Insidious movies, he would surely make sure your movies would not make money, because that guy, for me, can't draw flies in the theater. But he's part of the ragtag team that has to save the earth.
Like, they want to have some known actors, but sort of in the middling phase, they don't want to pay the big money to the acting talent. They want to put the money into the concept here. I'll be there, though. I like this stuff.
Many consider the Universal disaster movies the same thing, Chuck. I mean, I know we love Charlton Heston and George Kennedy, but at the time, they weren't big stars.
No, they were bigger, bigger than that cast. No. Italian Inferno?
I'm saying Universal ones that came out later.
Well, true. Well, listen, Heston was, we could talk about this for the next 2 hours, Heston's last phase in his career, which is the disaster genre after the sci-fi phase of his career. It's really fascinating. But
yeah, it was a biblical Western sci-fi. I mean, he really hit every genre.
Oh, it's amazing.
Crime, film noir.
And here's the thing about Heston. Always took his shirt off.
He did.
Even in Earthquake.
He did.
He's on the treadmill and he was like, here, 50-year Heston. I take my shirt. It must have been in the contract. Gotta get a shirtless scene in there.
In his defense, Airport 75 and Grey Lady Down, he kept his shirt on.
He did. It just didn't fit into the storyline, I guess, huh?
Grey Lady Down, he actually had a beard, which was...
Yeah, he did.
He never did a horror movie, unless you count the Omega Man. You know, if you think about it, he just never got in that genre. But I'll count the Omega Man.
Omega Man.
It's a great one. I know you do. Any other movie news that you got out
there? I got a couple things. Just first, I'm going to go into this week in film history. July 8th, 1984 was an interesting one, Mike, because two pop culture classics were released that day, Ghostbusters and Gremlins, same release. I remember seeing Ghostbusters. Actually, I saw Gremlins opening day at the Kings Plaza movie theater in Brooklyn, New York, 4 o'clock show. I loved it. We ended up seeing it 9 other times in the theater. And then I saw Ghostbusters that same weekend. Big crowd, Kingsway Movie Theater, Brooklyn, New York. People love that movie. I like Ghostbusters. I never loved it.
Yeah, I like Gremlins better. Praised. I'll give you that. I thought it was a little overpraised.
Good. It's a classic film. But interesting how two movies like that open the same day. Pretty impressive.
Yeah, and then you've got, by the way, if you're a fan of the Josh Gad reunions, which Chuck and I have talked about a lot, Monday, they'll be debuting the Ghostbusters
movie. That's pretty cool. So,
that's a big one.
And I saw the teaser on that.
Yeah, John, here's how successful these things are. They're actually making teasers for that now, Chuck.
Here's another one, Mike. June 11, 1982, E.T. the Extraterrestrial released in theaters. You know, we talk about this all the time, about budgets on these big summer tentpole movies, $150, $200 million being now the norm. E.T. budget, Mike, $10.5 million going on to make like $1 billion worldwide, critically acclaimed. Audiences love that film. Going back over and over to CET.
That's an
awesome movie.
It's a historic movie. I mean,
it is.
If you think about it, in the lexicon of great movies all time.
I think so.
That is there just because of the worldwide love.
Here's what's interesting. I did this movie for my daughter's birthday a few years ago and invited a bunch of classmates, and we had like 50 kids in the theater. And
is that the showing I went to?
No, that was a different one. And this was a private showing. When E.T., the resurrection scene, all those 50 kids stood up and applauded. An awesome memory.
New generation.
That scene's iconic, Mike.
It is.
Iconic.
My daughter has a tough time watching that scene, and as did I when I was 10 years old.
Now, if that scene doesn't move you, Mike, you simply have no passion in your life.
You think Donald Trump likes that scene?
No, he does not. Yeah, but he has better things to do, Mike. I don't know. Let's get political for a second here. HBO Max week pulled Gone with the Wind 1939 from their new streaming service due to what they deem is questionable content based on that time period.
Which is an important phrase right there, based on that time period. That's what the movie is, based on that time period.
Here's the thing. The movie's made, and I don't want to get overly political, I just don't think that is the – there's a lot of problems in this. And listen, pound for pound, for people who don't know, Gone with the Wind is the most popular movie ever made. That's a fact. Discount inflation.
Yeah.
You're talking about that movie makes billions and billions of dollars now.
Yeah.
And they say they're going to put it back on the streaming service with the caveat of a prologue to explain the content based on its time period. I respect that. But I think the more you do stuff like this, I think the more wedge you create.
Yeah. I don't think the Black Lives Matter movement wants something like that to happen.
I don't think it's the same subject. I think it's just let's talk here and now.
So what are we going to do? Are we going to stop the World War II movies that showed the gas of millions of Jews? I mean, is that what we're going to do too? I mean, that was an awful depiction of world history. It's on film. Are we going to stop showing those movies? I mean, I hate to say it, but this is part of our history. It's part of world history. It's nothing to be proud of, but it's important, I may say, to show so people understand what to do and not do.
Yeah, two other things. I just want to bounce off of this week in movie history. The Rock with Nicolas Cage and Sean Connery was released in 1996. I got to tell you, Mike, other than Die Hard, which I think is the greatest pure action film ever made, this is close for me.
Yeah.
As one of the best action movies. It might be the second best pure action movie I've ever seen. I love this film. Acting, story, score.
It all works.
It all works, right?
And I would go even farther saying outside of movies like Jaws and Back to the Future, this is like quintessential summer movie release. I remember where I was, what I was doing that summer. This is a pure summer action movie, and it just lives to this day. And again, we've talked about it a million times. Nicolas Cage making a movie a week. He can't do a Stanley Goodspeed sequel.
If there's one thing his agent should have negotiated, let's get a sequel with Stanley Goodspeed. Why not?
Yeah.
I mean, and listen, this was Sean Connery. After he made the career resurgence with his role as Malone in The Untouchables, and he's hot again, this is the pinnacle of that resurgence. The guy's a sex symbol in his film. The guy's in his 60s.
Yeah.
His dialogue, his banter, his charisma, his confidence. Man, don't get better than Sean Connery in The Rock. And just one other bit of news, Judd Apatow doing a documentary on George Carlin. Sign me up there.
Yeah, definitely.
That's great. I'm sure there's a lot of George Carlin footage. I love to see some of the behind the scenes stuff on George. One of the most influential, thought provoking, interesting voices of his generation, no doubt.
I don't know if you saw this too, but Jaws 4K came out on.
Did you watch it?
I haven't seen it. I've been seeing a lot of reviews on blogs and the blogs. A lot of people just say.
What are you saying?
That much of the same. I mean, you're not. I don't know how much clearer it's going to be and how much it's going to change your viewing of that movie, but I am interested in seeing that, to say the least. And they are going to be doing a viewing party. For that movie, I believe either today or tomorrow, with Kevin Smith hosting, 4 o'clock Eastern, 1 o'clock Pacific, for the rewatch of Jaws, I guess in some sort of a social party setting. So it could be worth our listeners' while if they get a chance to listen to this.
Okay.
And see it, the greatest movie of all time, bar none, Chuck. So
it's not. I thought it was the Poseidon Adventure. Well, Poseidon Adventure is the greatest movie of all time for me. Jaws is right there, though.
And much like Jaws 2, greatest sequel ever, Beyond the Design Adventure is...
But here's the thing. I think it's important that we referenced Beyond the Design Adventure once again on this broadcast. I think to me, for my sanity, that's always important.
And can I bring up one more topic before we get to Fast Five? And another that Hollywood just can't get out of their own way with, Chuck. And I showed you this preview earlier in the week, and this is a huge problem. Kevin Bacon's new movie, he stars opposite Amanda Seyfried as a couple in a haunted house with a child.
Understood.
Now, nowhere in this preview at all is it explained why a 61-year-old man would be married to a 32-year-old woman. And they would have a child together. Look, there are plenty of older actresses, younger men that could fill the same role.
Well, Stallone, when Stallone was making movies In the 80s and 90s, this was commonplace.
No, those movies were. I mean, those movies were about a single character in an action movie doing something. And
okay.
The female character was just there for window dressing. I mean, this is perceived as co-stars in a movie. Okay. This is a problem, Chuck.
Let me explain. You make a point. I don't agree with that point, but here's the thing.
6132, and you have a daughter.
Let me ask you a question. Is Kevin Bacon flashing his birth certificate or his driver's license in the film? How do you know he's not playing 52?
Let me tell you something. Now, I love Kevin Bacon. He's aged wonderfully. Yeah. Visibly, you can tell there's a difference between these two people on screen.
Okay.
I believe. I mean, I know what you're saying.
Is the audience going to care?
I don't know. Nobody's going to see this movie anyway because it's coming.
I don't know. I think he might.
Oh, here's the thing, Chuck. He's not like a sugar daddy either. I mean, they're making it seem like this is a normal. When he was in Footloose, she wasn't even born yet, Chuck.
Yeah.
That's the problem. We're not dealing with Tony Randall here. This is not Tony Randall.
Hello.
Anyway, I just want to go off on that tangent.
Fair enough. I think we should start another segment. Argument of the week. Things that bother you. Okay, fair enough.
Listen, I'm a pretty liberal guy. And if I'm watching a trailer and that comes across my mind, that means it's a problem. It's a problem.
All right.
Let's fast by before we go to our favorite movies that deal with race. Chuck, here we go. We'll start with Captain America, Chris Evans. Now, you can't pick Captain America. I want you to pick a Chris Evans movie. Who is 39 years old this weekend. I got a good one. I think you'll say, but I've got a good one that he was in.
I'm trying to think. He did a film 2 years ago.
Oh, that was a good one, too.
What was that one? He's a single dad. Gifted. I like that movie a lot. He's really appealing. I like his – who was his co-star from
Young girl. The comic. What's her name? Yeah, it'll come to me. I like her a lot, too. We like her so much, we can't think of her name.
Okay.
Jenny Slade.
Jenny Slade. Yeah, I like that pairing a lot. He was good in that.
He's also great in Knives Out, which, by the way, if you have Amazon Prime, Knives Out is free.
And here's how you know Knives Out is a popular movie. And bringing it back, it's on a double bill at Becky's Drive-In tonight.
It's a good movie. It's a real good movie. And I'll go way back in his career, Chuck.
Yeah.
The movie opposite Kim Basinger called Cellular.
Yeah.
Which is a real good flick.
That's one of the first things that put him on the map.
Yeah, a real good – that and Not Another Teen Movie. He's funny in that movie, too.
Yeah.
But Cellular, go back. William H. Macy's in that film.
You know, it's really interesting you bring up Kim Basinger, sort of like – you look in the past, not really the future. I mean, it's just, I don't know.
Hey,
it's weird.
Trivia question. Who's the villain in Cellular?
Jason Statham, right?
That's right. There you go.
Good Patton, one, too.
Yeah, Will Patton is 66 years old, Chuck. He's done a lot of great work. Obviously, he would pop up in a lot of the Bruckheimer movies as well, with Gone in 60 Seconds and Armageddon. And of course, he's in another movie that might be brought up later on. Remember the Titans? He's the white coach.
He's really good in that movie.
Yeah, he is.
You know, I remember Mothman Prophecies with Richard Gere. Interesting movie. That's a really interesting movie, actually. And then he plays the villain in Kevin Costner's.
That's the best one. Nobody out.
Really, really important in his career. A movie that altered Costner's career, which is The Postman. Not in a good way, but that movie has some merit, but has some. Really just clunky.
Yeah, it's not a good movie.
Over-the-top stuff.
A good movie with Kevin Costner was No Way Out, which he really is where he came on the scene in Hollywood. He plays the aide to Gene Hackman. That's a great movie. Gene Hackman's really good at that as well, playing that perfect guy who's supposed to be a good guy but is a bad guy. Will Patton's great in that movie. All right, here's a tough one, Chuck.
Good.
Adrienne Barbeau. How old do you think Adrienne Barbeau is?
She is... 68?
No, not even close, dude. She's 75 years old this
weekend. Wow, okay.
She's done a lot of great work. To me, I guess the one that really stands out is Escape from New York. You know, obviously she was starring in Carpenter movies because they were together at the time. But she's really good at that film, Chuck.
Listen, I remember her from the sitcom Maud with Bea Alda back in the day, right? So I think And then Escape from the Fog, too.
She's very good. And Swamp
Thing. She's actually really Swamp Thing. But she's good. She's one of the hot and soul of the Fog to some extent.
I would agree. Gene Wilder, too, this is tough, Chuck. I guess it's Willy Wonka, but
yeah, it's Willy Wonka. I mean, obviously Blazing Saddles, but that guy was awesome.
He would have been 87.
Wow, I know.
And, you know, you bring up Blazing Saddles, but again, you know, if we're going to take Gone with the Wind off,
I Young Frankenstein.
But I'm saying.
Oh, no, I know. Listen, they wouldn't touch. I don't think HBO Max would touch that film with a 10-foot pole right now.
That movie would not be able to come out in theaters right now. Know what's funny is, you know, Gene Wilder doesn't have a lot of, I mean, he's only in 37 acting credits.
I know.
And of course, Stir Crazy and Silver Streak with Richard Pryor.
You know, it's interesting when certain performers, when they say born for a role.
Yeah.
He was born to play Willy Wonka. That's why, you know, when Burton did his remake with Johnny Depp. And I liked that movie until Depp comes on screen. Like, the first 40 minutes, I really liked. The Charlie stuff's really good. And then Depp comes on screen, and it's like,
I don't
where's
know.
Gene, where's Gene Wilder?
I blame Tim Burton for that.
They took a creative choice or chance, and it's just weird, and it's a little uncomfortable. I can't stomach that performance.
It's just in a word, it's bad. And it's bad. Tim Burton should have said, no, we're not going to go that way. Let's come up with another way to
go.
Yes,
I agree. I mean, they should have looked at the first dailies and said, you know what?
No, this ain't working. That
ain't what we're looking for.
It has a pedophilish.
It does. It does.
That I don't like at all. And I also don't like at the end that all the kids just pop back up at the, I didn't like that. I like the way Willy Wonka
and where the original ended on such a high adrenaline, make you feel good note.
Yeah,
this is more melancholy. The end in Burton's, it just is so melancholy.
All right. Well, last but not least, he's turning 34 this weekend, and boy, he was on a really fast road to major movie stardom, and he kind of went off the rails a little bit. But Shia LaBeouf is 34 this weekend, and he already has a great IMDb filmography page. But Chuck, one has to wonder what would have been. Because he just got a little flaky, and people didn't want to cast him anymore.
Yeah, I mean, he's really good. I think he's good. You know, the thing is, as he gets older, you know, he's small. He's a small frame guy. He's got a boyish look. I don't know how much he would have broke into full blown leading man roles. But
he's great. Disturbia. He's good in the Transformers.
No, he's good. I agree.
He's
listen,
good in Eagle
I'm not.
Eye. Eagle Eye's a great movie too.
I agree. I like Disturbia a lot, actually.
Yeah, so he had the chops to.
He
to
did.
Grow
he
did. And he's been
trying to resurrect himself with some well received stuff. Not big box office stuff, but
no, he did two movies last year. A lot of people liked was Honey Boy and the Peanut Butter Falcon.
Right, and he did, and it's good stuff, and his work is good, and hopefully, you know, his head screw on straight, and he'll have a lot of good things in the future.
All right, Chuck, let's talk about our five favorite race-related movies. We're strictly going – I went African-American race-related movies. Of course, you and I are huge fans of the miniseries Roots, essential viewing for everyone.
Yeah. It's not on my list, but I just want to point – yeah. I just want to point out Roots is as great as any story ever put on film.
No doubt about it, and it's important to watch.
Iconic
as story, yeah.
And we talked about what made Roots so powerful, despite, you know, obviously the depiction, the accurate depiction, an amazing cast. But when they cast a lot of, you know, TV heroes as the slave owners,
yeah,
it works.
Yeah,
and it I just think, Robert Reed and it just Ralph Waite, it just works.
Boyd Bridges. You know, 12 Years the Slave, which won the Best Picture a few years ago.
Yeah.
I was kind of down on that movie a little bit because I thought it was a little exploitative.
Another one in the same subject matter that I'm going to talk about as my number four.
Right.
I think it is
important to watch 12 Years a Slave, but I think it's really hard to watch.
It is.
Maybe that's guilt, but I just thought that, you know, look, we know the lessons we've learned here, and I just thought it was – you know, there was no redemption at the end of it either. And I thought that was part of the problem too. I don't know. I think it's important to watch. It's like, how many times are you going to rewatch a movie like that?
True.
You're just not. You're not going to, you know.
I understand. It works in a historical.
Correct.
You know, every you know, a new generation, let's watch this film. It's important. I agree with that.
All right, well, let's get to the top five movies that we love. And my number five was a huge hit too, Chuck, and has a pretty much a lot of young actresses, Jessica Chastain, Emma Stone, Bryce Dallas Howard, Octavia Spencer, and that's The Help, about the comeuppance of a white rich family who own Help. And I thought this was funny. I thought it was it portrayed the African Americans as real heroes here, Chuck, and how the and some white people too, and the race relations in the 50s and how it was depicted was I would imagine quite accurate. And I tell you what, there's a lot of villains on screen. Bryce Dallas Howard plays a pretty intense one in this film too, and boy, does she get her comeuppance when Octavia Spencer cooks her a certain.
Yeah, great scene. And I like that movie a lot. You know, it's interesting. I just read that Octavia, you know, a lot of people in the Black Lives Matter movement, they have issues with this film. And Octavia Spencer said in an interview that she sort of regrets doing it, even though she won an Oscar for Best Supporting Actress, because she felt in the final product that the focus was more on the Dallas Bryce Howard character than her character. I don't know. I don't agree with that.
I don't agree with that either.
No, it's a really good film.
I think it portrays everybody, you know, equally and equal screen time, and I love that movie. Emma Stone's really good in it too, and it's very popular. A Broadway show as well. I mean, that movie is a huge hit, and a lot of people have seen it. And I think it's a
good pick. My number five, I went with Glory from 1989, movie about the first Black regiment in the Civil War. Denzel Washington won his first Oscar, Best Supporting mm-hmm. Actor. I thought, you know, his chemistry with Matthew Broderick, where Broderick comes to really respect these African American soldiers fighting alongside, doing the thing. It's an important story. It's well done. It's well directed, and a great score by James Horner. This is one of the best films I think of the 80s, and a really really good movie.
This is one of the 10 best films of all time. It's my actual number one.
Wow, on okay, list. Cool.
Yeah, Ed Zwick, your director.
Really good.
And the portrayal of Denzel Washington, fantastic. Moringer Freeman, Andre Brogner, too.
Mm-hmm, really
the
good.
Entire regimen, they are the stars.
And when, you know, it's film. Interesting. When you look at, and the other day I'm popping through Netflix at my smoothie shop, and we put on Ferris Bueller. Mm-hmm. And, you know, think of Matthew Broderick from Ferris Bueller to doing the serious fair here in Glory. It's impressive.
It's not that many years after.
No,
it's only
not.
A couple of years. And it's really inspired casting to say.
Mm-hmm, it is. It's a chance. They took a chance and it worked.
But some of the scenes, the scope of the scenes is Wick's directing here. And you're right, the score is.
Score is iconic.
Of all time.
Oh, absolutely.
And then the last final battle scene, there's a great interaction between Matthew Broderick and Denzel Washington that's important in this movie too, about nobody gonna win this war, nobody's gonna win, and if you watch it now, it really punches you in the gut. And then the final scene of the two and where they end up together is very symbolic. This movie, my sister shows. She's a history teacher in high school in New Jersey. Oh. She shows this movie, and it's an important movie to watch. About the first Black regiment in the Civil War. And, it is essential. This is my number one, Chuck. No doubt about it. I love this film. And I remember seeing it to this day in the theater. And really get emotional.
What's your number four?
My number four is Remember the Titans. We brought it up with Will Patton. And a sports movie in there, too. Because I think that if people or country reflected sports as much as it should reflect it more than it does, Chuck. I guess that's what I'm trying to say. Because if they get along in a locker room together, why can't we get along on the streets together? It just doesn't make any sense. All for the common cause, all for the common good. And that's what this movie really portrays about Denzel Washington and Will Patton getting together a white segregated school with a black school and making one high school team. And a great cast in this film as well. Very young Ryan Gosling in this film, and Hayden Panettiere as the whip-smart young daughter in this film, Chuck. Great casting, great score in this one, too. And just the overall important message of, look, in sports, we do it. Why can't we do it in life, Chuck, where we're all together, common cause, all equal, trying to head towards the same goal?
It's not on my list, but it's a really good film, and it's very popular. People, as sports movie goes, this is a really good one. Good pick. My number four, I went with, here's this really interesting film. Came out in 2016, Birth of a Nation. Right, we booked it at the theater where we involved it. I remember the hype on this film. It was a Sundance darling. A lot of money was paid for the rights.
And then the director got in trouble,
and
right?
And the director, who also stars in the film, his name is Nate Parker. Story comes out of a rape allegation like 20 years earlier. And they basically, a critical darling, they start to, they bury the film. It's its opening weekend. They basically shun it. But I tell you, Mike, I watched this movie, and I got to tell you, I was into this movie from beginning to end, and the last 20 minutes almost, it feels like an adrenaline pumping revenge film where it takes place on a plantation, obviously evil slave owners, and they get their comeuppance. And I tell you, this movie in this genre is as good as any of them, and it really works. And it was, to me, it was sad. The off-screen story that really buried a really good film. So for people who have not seen this movie, Birth of a Nation 2016, about slavery, it's well worth seeing. And it is, in my opinion, it is really, really, really good. My number four.
Well, I think, too, it's a good pick. I never saw it, but it's an important pick. I remember you telling me afterwards.
Really good. I was like, wow, this movie's really good. And it was like, nobody's going to see this movie now. Yeah. I mean, it got shunned. It didn't get an Oscar nomination. People just like, you know, we're not recognizing this film based on the accusation of.
Yeah, he got caught up in the Me Too movement. It was right at the height of it. And then I remember you telling me after you've seen it, you're like, Mike, this is just like 12 Years of the Slave. But the better. last 20 yeah. minutes, it really
satisfying from a viewer, yeah. From a viewer standpoint, that last 20 minutes is so satisfying.
Yeah.
And it takes it to a different level. That it's almost like what Tarantino does.
Even
though it's not revisionist,
retelling a history, right?
It's sort of revisionist in the content of the slaves get revenge, and right. And it feels good watching it.
Right, Chuck. My number three. Some might be critical of me putting it on here, but I thought it was important to show the evil that white men did when putting this list together. Because it really doesn't have a black protagonist in it. And my number three is Mississippi Burning, which co-stars Gene Hackman and Willem Dafoe, about federal agents who are trying to break up a KKK ring in the South. It doesn't really show a lot of the black perspective here, Chuck, because to me, I thought it was important to show, look, there were good white people trying to weed out these good, bad white people. And at the sake of black lives that live in Mississippi, and there's some evil people on the white side of things here, Chuck, whether it's Brad Dourif or Michael Rooker, Arlie Ermery, all roles, Stephen Tobolowsky, all scary roles as white men in this movie. And just the scene of Gene Hackman with Michael Rooker and with Brad Dourif in the barbershop, these were white guys trying to do good because of the evil that was living down in the 50s, about down in the South. I love this film. Alan Parker directed it. Gene Hackman's never, and I mean never, all due respect to Reverend Scott, never been better than he was. And he got an Oscar nomination for this too. Mississippi Burning. You just want to see any kind of perspective on why Black Lives Matter. Watch this movie and you'll understand why they felt persecuted for the last 250 years.
Hackman is, and maybe his most intense.
Yeah.
He's really good in that film. Not on my list, but a really important film. Good film. Good pick. My number three, I went with... I go back to 1991, John Singleton's Boys in the Hood. It's a positive message. It's this is important movie. Real positive message. Cuba Gooding Jr., Ice Cube's first movie. Lawrence Fishburne's awesome in this film
as
a father of Cuba Gooding Jr. A lot of really interesting messages in this movie. A lot that I agree with. Well acted. Made a lot of money. This is a solid box office hit in 1991.
It was an important message too, Beckett, because the ending, the African American who's doing it the right way ends up losing his life, but the African American doing the wrong way, he's got to learn a lesson from that. And I thought that it's never been shown like that before. And it just goes to show we lost John Singleton. That kind of sucks.
It does.
A great filmmaker, and that was a very important movie. It's not on my list, but I remember being very affected by the ending of that film. I'm being bummed by it too, but the harsh reality of what was going on in Los Angeles at the time, and probably still to this day is still an issue. Chuck, my number two is maybe one of the more important movies of all time, and that's Spike Lee's Coming to America, so to speak, and that's Do the Right Thing.
It's my number two also.
Does so many of the right things, Chuck, because it just, first of all, it depicts summertime in New York City better.
I love that. See, what I like about this film a lot, I love the backdrop. The backdrop is it's the hottest day of the summer.
It's all one day, too, which is great.
It's one day. Tensions between races are slowly faring, and obviously it comes to a head at the end, which was at the time somewhat controversial. It was controversial because people thought, oh, this is going to cause race riots. It's a fascinating movie.
It is on so many levels, too, and Spike Lee obviously stars in it himself as director, but it accurately portrays the white people in this movie so well, too, especially Italian-Americans in that area at the time. Danny Aiello is the pizza owner and his son, who's extremely racist in this film as well. Radio Raheem. I mean, so many iconic characters, Chuck. And, you know, some might question the motivation and, you know, because Mookie is portrayed as pretty much the level-headed good guy that can try to bond the two races together. And then at the end, Spike Lee goes in the direction of him throwing the can that gets things going towards the riot. Some question that move. But I think it was a. I think it was an important.
Well, maybe you know the fact he cast himself in that role. Led to that. You know,
interesting decision to make.
Yeah,
but an important one. No doubt.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a great movie, and above all, it really does. I mean, New York City and the hottest day of the year, and Samuel Jackson as your DJ too. Chuck, a lot of old faces there. Back in the day, in a great and important movie. All right, well, my number one was Glory. What was your number one? I think I know what it is in the back of my head.
I went with To Kill a Mockingbird as my number one because I think the character, one, I love Gregory Peck, and he was born to play Atticus Finch.
Sure.
A true voice of morality. And I think that was very important in the time period that this film came out in 1962. You know, it's really interesting. I've screened this movie a few times at the theater I'm involved in, and it, you know, the black and white photography on the big screen, it's like a time capsule.
Yeah.
And there's something special about watching this movie in a movie theater with a crowd. One, obviously the message, and just, it captures that period, Mike, almost like Rod Serling captured a Twilight Zone episode.
Yeah,
the black and white. It's a beautiful experience watching this film and a message that radiates. And Kill a Mockingbird really been popular on Broadway, and they even did it in Central Park last year. So message radiates, but Gregory Peck is iconic in that role.
Yeah, he is. I believe Jeff Daniels was playing.
Yeah, he did. When
it closed down.
Yeah, and he's fantastic also.
Yeah, an important movie to say the least. And I, you know, Just Mercy, watching that, I was watching it this week. It reminded me of The Kill a Mockingbird.
Good.
Yeah.
It's just for people who haven't watched Just Mercy, that movie fits Michael B. Jordan's talent really well.
Yeah.
Because it's sort of a slow burn film that the message or the content becomes more powerful each frame.
Yeah, absolutely.
And there's a sadness to that movie.
Oh yeah,
there's a sadness to that movie, especially
over the events of the last couple of weeks here.
But it's really good, and I think it's a movie that is going to be discovered more and more as time goes on.
Well,
hopefully so.
Even more so now because streaming, so people can watch it now too. Chuck, neither one of us put Green Book. Green Book almost made my list.
Listen, here. Green Book's another one that some people have issues. I don't. I mean, to me, I love that film.
Yeah.
It's a really good – listen, what is wrong with the bonding of two people from a different socio-economical whatever background, race, different – it's a really nice movie. That's a good thing.
Yeah, I think people get lost in the fact that it ends on a high note.
This
okay for everybody to get along at the end.
It is. And here's another one from the 1970s, a TV movie. I just want to point out Brian Song, right?
Yeah.
Brian Song's a great movie about what is about friendship, right? Yep. You got Brian Piccolo, played by James Caan, and you got Gale Sayers, played by Billy Dee Williams.
Yes.
Right? And play for the Chicago Bears in a time where it wasn't as simple as two different races playing on the same team as it is now.
No doubt.
More so. And it's that friendship, that bond, one of the best TV movies, highest rated TV movies of all time. Brian Song. That's another one to search out for people who have not seen that film. Good movie. Really good movie. Important movie, too.
Yeah. All right, Chuck, that'll do it for this week. We'll do this all over again. Most of all, stay safe and stay healthy out there, Chuck. I'll talk to you next week.
Mike, always a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to Movie Maniacs. Be sure to subscribe to us wherever you listen to podcasts. Download one of our archived episodes. This has been a presentation of Opt-In Productions. Podcasts by Federated Media. Podcasts by Federated Media.